Well, thank you very much, first of all, for coming today and taking your time, coming and supporting us and listening what we'll have to say about Kazakh-US partnership. I, of course, have prepared remarks. I think they're available for distribution, and I subscribe under each word in that official remarks, but I would prefer thinking aloud with you on the importance of our relationship and where we stand and what we have in mind in terms of taking this relationship to the future. Kazakhstan, of course, continues to build its modern life. Domestically, it continues to focus on key areas of its own development, political restructuring, economic development, and, of course, nation building. We do continue to focus on human capital enhancement. We understand very well that our success is very much dependent on how successful we will be in developing human capital. Therefore, Kazakhstan continues to invest hugely into education, into developing the human resources. This is a special care for Kazakhstan. This is where we want to continue to partner with the best practices in the world. And we hope that this is the answer to so many questions about the succession in Kazakhstan. The answer to the succession issue in Kazakhstan for political, analytical circles from abroad, for business communities from abroad, the answer is the strategy which we have developed, the strategy 2050. We announced this strategy. It's a very clear-cut, visionary document which announces that Kazakhstan aspires to become the world's one of the most developed countries, firmly within the group of top 30 developed countries. And you would, of course, understand that this means not only the economic development. This is about a very serious, deep, overall development of all aspects of life in Kazakhstan. And we completely understand that this will be done only with the help of young generation, better educated, differently motivated, forward-looking, advanced-looking young generation of people. And Kazakhstan spares no effort to ensure that this is a continued, persistent policy of the government of Kazakhstan. Of course, with new hands, with new brain, we want to build a strong economy. We understand the shortcomings of our own economy. It is still very much dependent on the extracting sector. Therefore, it is absolutely important that we do a very successful exercise in diversifying our economy. Therefore, our relationship with the United States is very important because the United States continues to be the source of best technologies, advanced technologies, best business practices, work ethics. These are the things which Kazakhstan willingly takes up for its own development. Therefore, we every time welcome U.S. investments. U.S. is strongly present in the energy sector in Kazakhstan. All the U.S. majors are in the energy sector of Kazakhstan, but we call upon business community in the United States to diversify your presence in Kazakhstan. Kazakhstan has created very favorable conditions for doing business in Kazakhstan. The government is very friendly, business friendly. Legislation is business friendly. There is a growing and burgeoning private sector in Kazakhstan, which should be the partner of foreign businesses in Kazakhstan. We have recently promulgated a new set of investment incentives, which include lots of tax holidays, lots of other beautiful, attractive things like 30% compensation of investments. If the investment is successful and you have built a facility which starts the production, then 30% of your investment is being returned by the government. This is a unique thing, but we want to make sure that our investment climate continues to be as attractive as possible, particularly in attracting high-tech, non-extractive types of things to Kazakhstan. That's our top priority. Along with that, Kazakhstan continues to build new institutions in the society. We are trying to perfect our political system. We are not a Jeffersonian democracy yet, but our aspiration to build modern, liberal, based on rule of law society in Kazakhstan. And we also understand that this is a very challenging task, and this is the task which cannot be done overnight. Therefore, we persistently nurture the new culture in our society. And this is how we see this type of this side of the development of Kazakhstan, as we call it nation building and democracy building. And again, this will be done by the new generation of Kazakhs, differently educated, born in the post-Soviet period, which is very important. So these are the focuses of Kazakhstan on the domestic scene, but the external situation is absolutely crucial for Kazakhstan's development. We understand that we will not be successful in achieving those internal goals unless we create and sustain a very favorable external environment for this. When we talk about the external environment, we talk about regional context and we talk about global context. Regional context, of course, immediately raises the question of Afghanistan. We are very much concerned on the continued risks which still exist in that country. Of course, we welcome the new government. We welcome the first signs and first first signs of the opportunities for the genuine national dialogue within Afghanistan. We try to support by all means these processes in Kazakhstan. We are supporting the international coalition which helps Afghanistan. We are providing our own assistance to Afghanistan. Overall, over these years, the amount of humanitarian assistance of Kazakhstan to Afghanistan amounts to almost $20 million. We have allocated $50 million to provide education to young Afghanis in civil subjects like agriculture, like engineering, like medical sector. And we committed ourselves to support the international coalition with financial resources to support the Afghan army, which is tasked to maintain stability and security in Afghanistan. Afghanistan is crucial in terms of providing space and opportunity for connectivity, regional connectivity. This is another top priority for Kazakhstan. We want to make sure that different concepts, the new Silk Road policy, which was announced by Secretary Clinton, the Kazakhs' own concept of the Silk Road, the Chinese concept of the economic belt of the Silk Road, they all come together. We see lots of benefits in developing this connectivity and making it a reality. And Afghanistan should play, and we hope will play, a key role in this connectivity efforts. Of course, Eurasia, where we are located, we are at the heart of Eurasia, is our special concern. We want to make sure that Eurasia is a space of peace and stability, which should be conducive to our own domestic development, to the conducive to the development of our neighbors, Russia, China, Central Asian neighbors. This is our dream, and we try to do everything to make sure that Eurasia becomes such a space, becomes a space of win-win scenarios, not a space where interests collide. On the contrary, we believe that Eurasia should be a space where interests converge and come together. Interests, legitimate interests of the United States, legitimate interests of Russia, legitimate interests of China, and other Europe, of course, and other players. We want to create this type of approach, and we hope that Kazakhstan will be a successful laboratory in promoting and building this new culture of win-win cooperation in Eurasia space. Therefore, the situation in Ukraine, of course, is of great concern for Kazakhstan. And Kazakhstan and its leader is doing a lot to make sure that peace approaches, peaceful approaches prevail. The first immediate task, of course, is to stop violence in Ukraine. For us, the Ukrainian issue is very dear because we have a very strong community of ethnic Ukrainians in Kazakhstan. More than 300,000 Ukrainians live in Kazakhstan. Therefore, we take this issue deeply to our heart and we try to support this peaceful, cooperative, constructive approaches with regard to the crisis in Ukraine. It is such a very unfortunate situation when we see that a very huge, potentially a great country, economically great country, is suffering a lot today. And we'll continue to partner with our regional players, with global players to make sure that Ukrainian crisis goes into history. Our partnership with the United States is of special nature. As I said, United States we see as the source of many good values which we need for our development in nation building, in civil society building, in economic prosperity building. Therefore, we hope that this partnership will continue to flourish. I came with a strong message from Kazakhstan, from the leadership of Kazakhstan to the leaders of the United States, that Kazakhstan values very much the relationship with the United States. We want this relation to go as far as 2050, where we'll complete our strategy, and beyond. We wish the United States successful domestic development. You, as a big country, of course, also face lots of challenges. We watch them and we are goodwillers to the United States. U.S. Special role in global affairs, of course, is recognized by everyone and very much respected by us. We are your partners and we want to give a hand on many regional and global issues. Our agenda is very full. It covers issues ranging from security, fighting the new threats like terrorism, down to nation building, democracy building, education. And we are very happy to have this very strong relationship. I see in this room many friends. Secretary Albright was among those who started to build this relationship. My presence has special affection towards Secretary Albright, and we all remember her. And we thank you, Secretary, for laying those building blocks in our strong relationship. Dan Poneman, Dick Hoagland, Fred Kemper, all are good friends of Kazakhstan, and we hope that we'll continue to cement this very strong partnership. I would like to close here, and of course I'll be absolutely happy to take up the questions. There are so many things to say. I once again tell you that there is an official set of remarks, prepared text. Please do take it. There is a lot of important information because Kazakhstan changes on a daily basis, economically, politically, we have many messages to carry. I brought all these messages to the United States. I'm very happy to see today Secretary Kerry. I'm very happy to see the National Security Advisor, Chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee tomorrow. So this is a very strong partnership, I'm very glad that we have created this platform where on an annual basis we can compare notes between Kazakhstan and the United States with our friends here and from this part of the world. Kazakhstan respects and values this relationship, and we think that this relationship has a very bright future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister Andreissov, for that those significant comments from setting a domestic and an international context, and thank you to you and Ambassador Mara for making this an annual event so that we can see you every December, and we'll try to book the next December 18th golf outing as well. Let me introduce now Secretary Albright, 64th Secretary of State. First woman to take that job. A lot of you know the various stops in her extraordinary vita that is really too long to list here. But very briefly, she served with distinction for the entire second term of the Clinton administration. She won the Presidential Medal of Freedom given to her by President Obama, which is our highest civilian honor. chair of the Albright Stonebridge Group, Albright Capital Management, chair of the National Democratic Institute for International Affairs, Pew Global Attitudes Project, and serves as president of the Truman Scholarship Foundation. But as a writer myself, I particularly respect that she writes so incredibly well, and she has recorded some very important pages of history. And of her 5 New York Times bestsellers, if you can pick up just one, please go out and get Prague Winter, which is one of the most moving memoirs, accounts of that period of time that I've ever read. So it's my honor to turn the stage to Secretary Albright.
Thank you very much, Fred. Thanks for pushing my book. And I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to be here with one of my former colleagues, Foreign Minister Idrisov. Really terrific. Thank you very much. And my thanks to the Atlantic Council and to the Embassy of Kazakhstan for inviting me and for organizing this terrific conference. I'm glad that it's going to happen more on a regular basis. There is certainly a great deal going on around the world today, from Eastern Europe to the Middle East, but it's also a very important time to talk about Central Asia. So I'm very grateful for this opportunity, and I listened very carefully to what you said, Mr. Foreign Minister, and all the distinguished guests here to discuss the future of the region and the future of the strategic partnership between the United States and Kazakhstan. As the first country to recognize Kazakhstan's independence on Christmas Day in 1991, the United States was an early supporter of its reemergence as a strong sovereign nation. And when I became ambassador to the United Nations 2 years later, I found that I had something in common with my counterpart from Kazakhstan, Ambassador Akhmaral Arstembaykova. We were two of only 7 women serving as permanent representatives at the time, and that was from among 183 countries. The others were Canada, Jamaica, Liechtenstein, Philippines, and Trinidad Tobago. So this is one of the first times that I didn't have to make lunch myself, and so I asked my assistant to invite the women, thinking that there would be many others, and then I get to my residence, and there are these 6 other women. Being the American, I decided to form a caucus, which we did, and we called ourselves the G7. We also pledged to always take each other's telephone calls. I have to say, this agreement did kind of upset some of our male representatives, because they wondered, why would I immediately take a call, not just from Kazakhstan, which was obvious, but from Liechtenstein? I told them that the solution for all of this was to have them themselves replaced by women, so that didn't get very far. In all seriousness, there were some very important and consequential years for the emerging strategic partnership between the United States and Kazakhstan. And just last month, we marked the 20th anniversary of Project Sapphire, a joint effort between our nations which rid Kazakhstan of approximately 600 kilograms of weapons-grade uranium, enough to make 30 Hiroshima-sized bombs. As a new member of the United Nations, Kazakhstan earned abiding respect for its commitment to counterproliferation. And incidentally, one of the key architects of that program was a man named Ashton Carter, who many of you know as President Obama's nominee to be his next Secretary of Defense. In the years that followed Project Sapphire, our two nations built a broader relationship, and the United States committed to supporting Kazakhstan's economic progress, including the balanced and sustainable use of its vast energy resources. And I saw that progress firsthand when I became Secretary of State and visited Astana. On my flight into Kazakhstan, a reporter asked me a question that often greets American officials who work in Central Asia. Viewing the region through the prism of, quote, the great game, the reporter wanted to know how big a chess move I was making by taking that trip. So my response was that I wasn't really very good at chess. The truth is that for the United States, there is no game to be played in Central Asia. But by virtue of its geography and history, Central Asia has been and always will be a region of the world in which we have to be and are interested. And that's especially true now, given the impact that today's world events are having on the region. Earlier this week, the United States and NATO officially ended their combat mission in Afghanistan after more than 13 years of war. And while the new government headed by President Ghani has taken many encouraging steps, Afghanistan is still a fragile state that will need long-term support from the United States and the international community. And that's why it's critical that NATO proceed with its train, advise, and assist mission, Operation Resolute Support, and why I support the United States making a large contribution to that effort. Still, the transition in Afghanistan is making many Central Asian nations anxious, not only about stability in Kabul, but about a resurgence in terrorism and drug trafficking across the region. And then there is the impact of Russia's intervention in Ukraine. I imagine that most everyone in this room has paid a great deal of attention to the crisis in Ukraine over the past year, because it has become abundantly clear that this is not simply a Ukrainian crisis or a Ukraine-Russia crisis, but a crisis caused by Russia's revisionist thinking and policy with implications for all of Russia's neighbors and the entire world. Put simply, the Kremlin has made clear that it believes the post-Cold War Eurasian security order is seriously flawed and must be revised. As part of this approach, Moscow claims a right to protect Russian speakers wherever they may be or whatever they want. Brandishing and distorting this alleged right, Russia ordered the seizure of Crimea by force and began a covert war, now more open, in Ukraine's east. Russia has also stepped up political pressures on many of its neighbors, including Georgia, Azerbaijan, Turkmenistan, and Kazakhstan. The more the world turns to non-Russian sources of energy and the more Russia feels the impact on its economy, the more pressure we may see Russia apply to these countries. Vladimir Putin has called the dissolution of the Soviet Union the greatest tragedy of the 20th century, and he believes that Russia has spent more than 20 years being insulted and unable to project its power. Fred mentioned my book about Prague Winter, which goes from 1937 to 1948, and anybody who can call the dissolution of the Soviet Union the greatest tragedy somehow has forgotten about World War I and World War II. The entire region is understandably worried about what Putin might decide to do next, and I'm sure that all of you are familiar with what Mr. Putin said at Lake Seligore when he ignored 400 years of history and declared that Kazakhs never had any statehood before 1990s. This was no gaffe or accident. While Russian revisionism can extend to every Central Asian country with ethnic Russians, an obvious place of interest is northern Kazakhstan. This is something our Kazakh friends should be discussing in Washington, Brussels, and Beijing. And this is something that the United States needs to take seriously. Given these challenges, it's very important for Washington to enhance its relationship with Kazakhstan and its Central Asian neighbors in a way that bolsters regional security and promotes economic and political progress. But we cannot and should not view this as some kind of a chess game. All countries in the region have the right to choose their own path, and for Kazakhstan, this will undoubtedly mean maintaining its ties with Russia while developing and asserting its independence and sovereignty through relationships with many states. Russia cannot, and the United States will not, ever force Kazakhstan or any other country in the region to follow a certain political or economic path. But we can help Kazakhstan and other Central Asian countries build a better future for themselves. And that future should include, as many have suggested, deeper integration between the economies of the region and between the region and the rest of the world. Barriers to trade and the legitimate movement of people and goods have been a major impediment to the development generally in Central Asia, which clearly has to be addressed. The new Eurasian Economic Union may be one piece of that effort, but it can't be the whole puzzle. I note that Foreign Minister Idrisov has himself highlighted Kazakhstan's position as a land bridge between European and Asian markets and challenged the entire international community to support a future where Central Asia is land-linked rather than land-locked. And you've said this many times, and you repeated it again this morning. That vision is perfectly aligned with the New Silk Road Initiative put forward by the United States, with its focus on creating a regional energy market, promoting trade and transit, streamlining customs and borders, and connecting people and businesses in Central Asia. So there are many areas of potential cooperation between Kazakhstan and the United States, but for the true potential of this strategic partnership to be realized, and for Kazakhstan to succeed in building a better future for its people, its political progress must keep pace with its economic development. And here, there are some areas of significant concern for the United States and the international community. For instance, the arrest and sentence of the Kazakh Democratic Opposition leader Vladimir Kozlov is a serious human rights violation, and the 2014 Human Rights Watch annual report describes an intensifying campaign against independent and opposition media in Kazakhstan. Recent actions like the move to shutter an independent news magazine are steps in the wrong direction. Some leaders in Central Asia have spoken about managed democracy and suggest developments like these are simply part of the Asian way. But history teaches us that managed democracy does not work. In fact, it's an oxymoron. A strong society is built from the ground up. It depends on people having a representative government and the right to speak out and assemble, and it requires governments that are transparent and accountable. President Nazarbayev has gotten very used to me saying these things. We are good friends, and I think good friends always make their points of view clear. Economic growth, meanwhile, cannot come from the ripples created by the rich or or from the largesse of an authoritarian government. It will come only when the energy and initiative of the majority is rewarded so that the economic ladder is long enough to reach the bottom and sturdy enough for everyone to climb. This will also make a resource-rich societies more likely to weather a downturn in oil and gas prices, which we're seeing today. And all this is why the United States must continue to be a force promoting better governance and respect for human rights in Central Asia, not because we believe we can dictate the region's future, but because we believe it is the best way to help support the continued growth of Kazakhstan and its neighbors. And that is the message that we are talking about here and that I have delivered so many times to President Nazarbayev over the meetings that we've had. We've accomplished much in the past 23 years by working together as partners. And I have every confidence that our partnership will only grow and deepen in the future, in large measure, thanks to the hard work and commitment of those in this room today. So I thank you all very much for being here and for this meeting, and I look forward to many more meetings like this with you, Mr. Foreign Minister, and with the Ambassador, and having the opportunity to continue this discussion.
Secretary Albright will have to leave a bit early before the Q&A. Thank you for those very strong remarks. I'm sure that Minister Andreessov will respond to a couple of them later on. I can only embrace that the good friends have to speak openly to each other. In that context, let me ask you one question since we'll lose you for the Q&A part. If you're sitting with President Obama right now, first of all, how concerned are you that the U.S. post-Afghanistan withdrawal is going to lose interest in this region? We have a tendency to gain interest and lose interest more quickly than we should sometimes. And what is your most compelling argument to him of how and why we need to stay engaged in Central Asia?
I thank you very much, Fred. I do think that the United States obviously has interests in engagement everywhere. And I think that, on the contrary, some of the recent statements by the President and the administration make very clear the continued interest in the region. I also do think that what is compelling about it is the remarks that I made in terms of location, 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 and history, and the various signals that are sent when one continues to show interest in a part of the world that is so central, literally, in terms of political and economic future and the strategic relationship. I think the fact that there really is more and more emphasis on the word strategic and relationship, that it is not something that is just temporary. And I do think, as the foreign minister said, the location of Kazakhstan in where it is physically and we were talking about China and Russia and our interest in it. And so I think there's a very compelling argument that makes clear that we have to continue our interest, whether it's economic or political. And I very much support and favor the combination of the kinds of issues that are out there, strategic relationship, that I think the fact that the foreign minister is here and that you are creating this dialogue makes very clear that we're not going to abandon the region.
Great.
Thank you all very, very much. I apologize, but I do have to go.
Thank you. Thank you very much.